Jill Anderson is a North Shore naturalist. She lives in Cook County and joins us periodically to talk about phenology or what's going on in the woods right now. Welcome back, Jill.
Hi.
Well, at one point last year, we briefly talked about pine grosbeaks, and I mentioned they seemed scarce, but now I've seen quite a few.
Well, good. Yeah. We have seen a bit of a change. Our evening grosbeaks have almost all left, which really unusual to have a big group. And now we do finally have not quite the normal number, but we do have more pine grosbeaks visiting the feeder. And but it's, at least in our group, I'll be interested to hear you tell me about your group. There really is there are very few adult males in the group so far.
Yeah, the first ones we saw, we had three females, and we had three females for quite a while. Then we got a male in there, and now I think we have two males, but the females seem to still be at three. So we've got on and off five.
I'm delighted to see more of them myself. They're not only very handsome, beautiful birds, I think, but I just love the way they talk to each other.
Oh yeah, it's really neat to sit outside and listen to them when they're in the in the area, because they have a beautiful little sound.
Yeah,
and they talk a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, if all of our civil discourse was modeled on the pine grosbeak, it would just be a much more beautiful thing to listen to. Maybe the substance wouldn't be any different, but at least it would be more pleasant to listen to. To my ear, there's a whistled quality to it, but it's also got a little bit of a whispering, lisping kind of aspect to it. So it's not real regular. It's not like a whistled white-throated sparrow call, but it's very melodious and musical without being really complex or elaborate. So these lovely birds are birds primarily spending most of their lives much further north. They're a truly boreal bird, and they're occasional in our area. They're part of this group of winter finches that is known for having eruptions, they're called. That's IRR, not ER. And that refers to an irregular migration. So unlike the birds that we are all familiar with that truly come and go in the course of a year, these birds, whether they come here or not, is not necessarily guaranteed every year. And how many come and which ones come is obviously, just from our own personal experiences, can be quite variable from one year to the next. And the reason that these eruptions occur is that either the scarcity of food in their normal habitat to the north becomes a factor in survival. And so the birds push away, into surrounding terrain as far as they need to go to find a sufficient food. And scarcity of food, of course, can come from either kind of a failure of the food supply in terms of its production of seed and fruit, which are the key foods of this bird, or it can be that maybe the plants were doing fine, but there was such great population of birds for the winter that they're consuming the food faster than they might otherwise be. So great success in nesting can produce enough birds to cause an imbalance there between food and those who need to eat it. So then they have to look for food elsewhere. The adult males are that beautiful rosy pink mostly. And the thing that all the birds have are dark blackish brown wings and tail. The wings have two very distinct white wing bars. They also have, as I said, a dark blackish brown tail, which is slightly forked and fairly long. Females and the immature males are very difficult to distinguish from one another with any kind of certainty. Basically, other than the wings and the tail, they're anywhere from a yellowish olive on the head and the neck, and then gray pretty much the rest of the body, very soft, really beautiful hues of gray. But they can also be kind of a reddish bronze on the head. So there's a lot of variability and between the immature birds and the females, adult females. There's a lot of variability in both those and a lot of overlap. So it's not easy to know for sure what you're looking at.
They also seem to be very placid. The evening grosbeaks are kind of frenetic when they get into the bird feeder. Mm-hmm. They're talking to each other and carrying on. Mm-hmm. And the pine grosbeaks aren't that way. It's like they're a whole different kind of bird.
Right. Yeah. They're really different personality, you know, if we want to use that term. Yeah. Very placid, very low key. I guess there are stories of people actually being able to go out and get one on their hand because they're not easily spooked as lots of other birds that come to the feeders. And they have those beautiful, almost glossy, black, thick, stubby bills, a little bit of a curve, like all these bigger finches do, like the evening grosbeak and the rose-breasted grosbeak. So they're well-equipped for dining on
but
seeds.
But they're smaller than either of those other two species.
Yes, right. Yeah. And all black.
The beak is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And all black. You know, I wouldn't expect them to take focus on taking seeds that are really tiny, like alder seeds. We've talked about alder seeds. But, boy, birch seeds, the berries from all the trees, rose hips, anything else that's, if you read a list of all the, within their range, all the different seeds that they eat, it's an amazing assortment. I mean, they really will go after, you know, just about any kind of seed that is size is bigger than an alder seed. If you've got food available that's more suited to your dining equipment, then that's what you're going to focus on for sure. We were really treated one year to having one live in our house with us for about 2.5 weeks. It was a bird that had an injury. I found it in the snow. It didn't seem terribly injured. It looked like if it was sitting still, it just looked like one of its shoulders was slightly slumped. It's not quite up where it belonged, and I had no idea whether eventually get better or not, but I just couldn't bear to leave it outside. So I brought it in, and oh my gosh, what a tremendous treat it was to just watch how it definitely maintained its wildness, but because it was mellow, it was very little frantic behavior, but it just kind of kept its distance from us, and we kind of tried to do the same. We just kind of gave it the run of one big room where there was lots of light, where it could see out, and it quickly realized that, oh, it couldn't go through the windows, and because it couldn't fly, it couldn't hurt itself banging into the windows, and it was just really an amazing thing to see how quickly it adapted to that indoor space. I just put out a little bowl of seed. I put out a little shallow dish of water. It just quickly learned where those were and would go there when it needed to. It found a plant that I had that had a lot of gravel in the mix, and it would feed on the gravel from there. It was just there. It found that all on its own. I brought in the top of a fallen black spruce that had some cones on it. And so at night, just before it got dark, it would go up in that little treetop, and it would pick the cones apart and eat the seeds, and then it would roost there for the night. It was just amazing. It was really, really fun.
Chell Anderson, botanist and plant ecologist, thanks for helping us understand pine grosbeak.
You're very welcome.